So I was doing some soul searching this week and took stock of my life a little bit, and I was thinking about this, and on a sad note, I think about the fact that I have disappointed the closest people in my life. I've disappointed my wife, I've disappointed my parents, I've even disappointed my kids, and I'm sure some of you have thought, I've disappointed you in some way, shape, or form. Heck, I've even disappointed my dogs when I tell them no more treats after the 10th treat. Or worse, whenever they see a suitcase near the front door, their sad little eyes tell me everything I need to know. And when I think about moments of disappointment where I've let people down, I think to myself, if I was in the military, I think I would be known as Major Disappointment. And as entertaining as it may be to air dirty laundry today, I think it's clear throughout our lives, I know for me, I've been insensitive, I've been self-centered, I've even lost my temper more than I should have over the years. And when I think about those moments, I understand that I'm excellent at creating disappointment, even accidentally. I can remember when I was 5 or 6, I don't know if I've told you this story, but maybe I have. 5 or 6, I was asked to set the table for dinner, and while I was getting silverware out of the drawer, my brother was carrying dinner to the table, and I took a step back as I was pulling the silverware out, and he tripped over my foot, and goulash went all over to the kitchen floor. Yeah, I know I spelled it wrong. That's what I feel about goulash. I never really liked it anyways, but I would have never, ever considered ruining dinner for everyone. I wasn't even trying to disappoint anybody, and yet I was still doing it. And needless to say, my parents were angry, more my dad than my mom. And I was in big trouble because I sabotaged our one-pot meal. It was the only time I'd ever been sent to my room without supper. I know it's hard to believe, but I was a sensitive kid. I was devastated. And the fact that I'm telling you this story is a realization of how much this moment of disappointment traumatized me, that I remember it, 42 years later. And for the record, I'm still not a fan of goulash. So we're either in a place of either disappointing others or being disappointed by others at any moment in time. I mean, heck, if you watch the news and you're not disappointed by what you see, I'd want to check you for a heartbeat. See, when we disappoint others, and we are aware of it and we care, and I say that because not everybody cares and not everybody's self-aware that they disappoint others, but when we do, something happens. Guilt and shame creep in. And this is where it gets bad. I mean, first, it's guilt. You feel bad for doing something, and you put it on yourself. You get sad, or you're angry at yourself. You beat yourself up for doing that thing, and you know, there's whole bunches of stuff. You want to hide. But guilt has a cousin. It's shame. And it takes guilt to a whole new level. It's like guilt on steroids. Rather than seeing that you did something bad, shame tells you that you are bad. Instead of seeing something as an isolated incident, you're convinced this is the sum of who you are. You are a bad person. Now that feeds into other stories like I'm unlovable, I'm unforgivable, and you pull away, so shame isolates. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. When your face and your ears get hot, maybe even hot tears, a sadness mixed with embarrassment, you never want to face that person again, whoever that is, not because they're wrong, but because we were wrong. Now, if you're emotionally healthy, but yet spend your life holding on to the things you've done wrong, you might never leave the house again. Now, I'd be remiss not to tell you what the other side of the spectrum is of that. The other side of the spectrum of that is being a sociopath. A sociopath actually lacks empathy, caring for others. They also have an entitled attitude. And they don't even experience shame and guilt. It's not in their wheelhouse at all. They actually do things that induce shame and guilt in healthy people. But they just don't care. Matter of fact, sociopaths don't mind hurting others if it makes them look good. Or they feel that they're beneath them. So people like this leave a relational turmoil. They leave a wake of destruction wherever they go. They don't make good friends, and they make terrible spouses. Now, for the rest of us who care, there's a danger of holding on to mistakes, which lead to guilt and shame. And it's also a danger not to forgive those who have disappointed us, because when we fall into that, what happens is when we hold on to that, our lives are actually miserable. So how do we let go of things? Well, let me explain it this way. Let's go back in time, not as far back as Bible times, but let's go back to a football game being played at Camp Randall Stadium in Madison, Wisconsin on October 16th, 1982. You with me now? You guys with me here? Okay, good. So this game is being played. 60,000 fans in attendance. And early on, University of Wisconsin was playing Michigan State, and they were losing early on. And during the timeouts of this game, when the play was at stop, when there was a timeout, when there was nothing going on, fans would erupt in cheers, and they'd jump up and they'd roar with approval. And why was that, even though their team was losing? Because many of the fans in the stadium were listening to their transistor radio, and 70 miles down the road in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they were listening to Game 4 of the World Series while the St. Louis Cardinals took on the Milwaukee Brewers. And so while their team on the field was losing, their Milwaukee Brewers were winning. There was something better up the road. But that's the thing. The Christian life is like that. When our current situation is filled with disappointments, maybe we need to tune into something up the road that's just a little bit better. And it's not just something, it's someone. Now, that's a lot of stuff right there. It's a lot of stuff. And I know some of you are thinking, I thought this guy was supposed to be preaching about David this morning. He had it on a sermon slide. It was one of the readings, what's going on? Well, I'm glad you asked. So we come to the end of this look at King David's early years, before he became king. Matter of fact, if you were following along after chapter 27, not too far ahead, Saul, the king, takes his own life when the Israelite army is routed by the Philistines, thus making a path for David to become the next king of Israel. But think about where David is right now in the reading. He decided to go live with the Philistines, the arch enemy of Israel, kind of like the Amalekites. I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, he fought against them. He killed Goliath. I mean, this was the worst group of people in the eyes of the Israelites at this time. I mean, it would be like the next president of the United States who goes to live in Russia or North Korea before returning to the United States to run for president. Maybe that's not a good example. But that wasn't the end of it. As you heard, it'd be one thing to go live quietly in the land of your archenemy because the king of Israel is pursuing you. But he didn't do that. He went on to raid small villages in parts of the Negev desert. When he did that, he killed everyone, meaning innocent people. He went on raids, people who didn't provoke problems. David was many things, and one of them was he was brutal. It's a disturbing story, but I picked it for a reason. when we're looking at the early life of David, or even his whole life, we could cherry pick our way around the Bible and portray David as a victim of King Saul's instability. We could just do that, and you'd never know unless you actually read the stories. We could sanitize it and say, oh, poor David, his life was so hard. And it may have been hard, but he was no saint either. He killed people that were living life and minding their own business. It is an ugly, ugly thing. And when I think about that, we see that David is behind enemy lines, but he doesn't live quietly. Now the question becomes, does David have shame and guilt over this? I don't know. The Bible was silent about that. But what do we know about David when we look at his entire life? When we take this story and everything else, what do we know about David? He is remembered as the greatest king of Israel's history. Even though he did things like this, and even though he committed adultery while he was king, he's still remembered as the greatest king of Israel's history. It doesn't excuse that behavior, but what does it tell us? It actually brings us a message of good news this morning, something unexpectedly wonderful for us. Now, as you know, last week I was at the National Youth Gathering in Houston, and one of the keynote speakers we heard was a guy by the name of Brian Stevenson. He's a civil rights attorney who specializes in juvenile justice. And while he was talking to us, he said this: each of us are more than the worst thing we've ever done. Let me say that again. Each of us are more than the worst thing we've ever done. Wow. It's true for King David, and it is true for us. We are not and should not ever be defined by the worst thing we have ever done. Like I said, it doesn't excuse it, but that shouldn't become our life story. But the issue is guilt and shame will try to convince us otherwise. Our psyche will whisper us and tell us, oh, you're a bad person. You're not worthy of love. It's better that you will be alone than be around people because you're so bad. But yet we hear a word of good news that each of us are more than the worst thing we've ever done. Now, the foremost expert on guilt and shame in the country, and some of you might have heard of her, name's Brené Brown. She's from the University of Houston. I did not see her while I was in Houston, but she's a Christian. And she gives us some wise advice about shame and guilt. She says, shame needs three things to grow exponentially in our lives: secrecy, silence, and judgment. By keeping quiet, Brown says, your shame will grow exponentially. It will creep into every corner and crevice of your life. Shame depends on me buying into the belief that I'm alone. So you know what shame and guilt is like. It's like a mushroom. It needs a dark, quiet place to grow, a place that is undisturbed. But the antidote is to talk about these things. Talk about the things we're ashamed of with people who care and people who are empathetic. Now, guess what, people? This is the greatest news of all. You are filled in a room with empathetic and caring people. That is the beauty of today. Is you're like, well, who am I going to share? You got people. We have people. Mushrooms hate light, and so do shame. And someone up the road cares too. Remember what I said about tuning into something up the road beyond ourselves? Well, Jesus does not buy into shame and guilt at all. He wants to banish it forever. He isn't interested in rehashing the past. He's all about moving forward. See, he won't let our worst moments define our lives either. He saw us on our worst day, and he decided to do something about it. Remember Romans 5:8? But God demonstrates his love for us, his own love towards us, in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Or to simplify it, I loved you at your darkest. Jesus doesn't hold our worst day against us, which makes me wonder, why do we spend so much time reliving those moments in our own lives? Clearly, David made an unlikely move. He made an unsavory move. It's an ugly move. But it did not define his entire life. I mean, literally, it was his goulash moment. And we need to be able to move on from our messy moments of our lives as well. Because David was remembered as being great. So maybe we need to take a page out of David's entire life. It's time to let go of the past. Maybe it's time to let go of the past of other people too, so that we can move forward. See, the past can't change, so why should we even live there? Our future is wide open, and Jesus wants to fill it with love and joy and deep connection. I'd rather live there than in the past. Amen.